ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we're beginning a new chapter of the ninth canto. This chapter is chapter 16, entitled Lord Parashuram Destroys the World's Ruling Class. I'll read a chapter summary, and then there are quite a few verses before we get to a purport, so hang in there. When Jamadagni was killed by the sons of Kartavirya-Arjuna, as described in this chapter, Parashurama rid the entire world of Kshatriyas 21 times. This chapter also describes the descendants of Vishwamitra. When Jamadagni's wife, Renuka, went to bring water from the Ganges and saw the king of the Gandharvas enjoying the company of Apsaras, she was captivated, and she slightly desired to associate with him. Because of this sinful desire, she was punished by her husband. Parashuram killed his mother and brothers, but later, by dint of the austerities of Jamadagni, they were revived. The sons of Kartavirya-Arjuna, however, remembering the death of their father, wanted to take revenge against Lord Parashuram. And therefore, when Parashurama was absent from the ashrama, they killed Jamadagni, who was meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Parashurama returned to the ashrama and saw his father killed, he was very sorry. And after asking his brothers to take care of the dead body, he went out with determination to kill all the Kshatriyas on the surface of the world. Taking up his axe, he went to Mahishmatipura, the capital of Kartavirya-Arjuna, and killed all of Kartavirya-Arjuna's sons, whose blood became a great river. Parashurama, however, was not satisfied with killing only the sons of Kartavirya-Arjuna. Later, when the Kshatriyas became disturbing, he killed them 21 times, so that there were no Kshatriyas on the surface of the earth. Thereafter, Parashuram joined the head of his father to the dead body and performed various sacrifices to please the Supreme Lord. Thus, Jamadagni got life again in his body, and later he was promoted to the higher planetary system known as Saptarshi Mandala. Parashurama, the son of Jamadagni, still lives in Mahendra Parvata. In the next Manvantara, he will become a preacher of Vedic knowledge. In the dynasty of Gadhi, the most powerful Vishwamitra took birth. By dint of his austerity and penance, he became a Brahmana. He had 101 sons, who were celebrated as the Madhuchandas. In the sacrificial arena of Harishchandra, the son of Ajigartha, named Shunashepa, was meant to be sacrificed, but by the mercy of the Prajapatis, he was released. Thereafter, he became Devarata in the dynasty of Gadhi. The 50 elder sons of Vishwamitra, however, did not accept Shunakshepa as their elder brother, and therefore Vishwamitra cursed them to become lechers, unfaithful to the Vedic civilization. Vishwamitra's 51st son, along with his younger brothers, then accepted Shunakshepa as their eldest brother, and their father, Vishwamitra, being satisfied, blessed them. Thus, Devarata was accepted in the dynasty of Kaushika, and consequently, there are different divisions of that dynasty. Okay, everybody got that? All right, so, text one. Shishakovacha pitopashikto ramas tateta kurunandana sangvatsarang tirtayatram charitvashramam avrajat. Shukadeva Goswami said, My dear Maharaj Parikshit, son of the Kuru dynasty, when Lord Parashuram was given this order by his father, he immediately agreed, saying, Let it be so. For one complete year, he traveled to holy places. Then he returned to his father's residence. So this was after killing Kartavirya-Arjuna. His father said, You did a wrong thing. Killing the emperor was even worse than killing a Brahmana. So now you have to go to holy places. Didn't really have to, you know, like in the incidents of Lord Balaram, killing, who did he kill? Ramarshi, right. So in that case also, the sages, they suggested, they can't order Lord Balaram, and there's no sin for the Lord. Similarly, there was no sin for Lord Parashuram. But they suggested that to set the right example for the people in general, to atone for this apparent sin of killing Rama Harshana Suta, please travel to the holy places. So he did that also. All right, let's just read the translations. Text 2. Once when Renuka, the wife of Jamadagni, went to the bank of the Ganges to get water, she saw the king of the Gandharvas decorated with a garland of lotuses and sporting in the Ganges with celestial women, apsaras. So in previous ages, the beings from higher planets, like these Gandharvas and others, all the way up to Lord Brahma, they would come to this planet quite frequently, it seems. But in Kali Yuga, it's not a fit place to be visited. Like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, it's not a fit place for any gentleman. The material world in general, but what to speak of this earth planet in the Kali Yuga. No place for ladies and gentlemen to hang out. Text 3. She had gone to bring water from the Ganges, but when she saw Srisharata, the king of the Gandharvas, sporting with the celestial girls, she was somewhat inclined toward him and failed to remember that the time for the fire sacrifice was passing. Text 4. Later, understanding that the time for offering the sacrifice had passed, Renuka feared a curse from her husband. Therefore, when she returned, she simply put the water pot before him and stood there with folded hands. The great sage, Jamadagni, understood the adultery in the mind of his wife. Therefore, he was very angry and told his sons, "My dear sons, kill this sinful woman." But the sons did not carry out his order. Text 6. Jamadagni then ordered his youngest son, Parshuram, to kill his brothers who had disobeyed this order. And his mother, his mother who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parashuram, knowing the power of his father, who was practiced in meditation and austerity, killed his mother and brothers immediately. I think there was only a short purport here. That's why we're going to... Actually, no, we can actually do this one. Yeah, sorry. Let's do this one. Text 6. Rama Sanchoditaha Pitra Pratrin Matra Sahabadhit Prabhava Gyo Munahe Samyak Samades Tapashash Cha Saha. Sounds to me like they're working today. Yeah, I think they're out there. Okay. Ramak sanchoritak pitra Pratrin matra sahabatit Prabhavagyo munek samyak Samadhis tapashash chasaha Ramak sanchoritak pitra Pratrin matra sahabadhit Prabhavagyo munek samyak Samadhis tapashash chasaha Ramak sanchoritak pitra Pratrin matra sahavadhit Pabhavagyo munek samyak Samadhis tapashash chasaha. Please chant. Pratrin Matra Sahabharit Prabhava Gyomane Samyak Samadhe Stapasasasaha Vaishnavins Ramak Sancho Ritak Chitra Pratrin Matra Sahabhathit Prabhava Gyomunek Samyak Samadhe Stapasasasaha. Right, synonyms. Ramaha, Lord Parashurama, Sanchoditaha, being encouraged to kill his mother and brothers. Pitra, by his father. Bratrin, all his brothers. Matrasaha, with the mother. Abadhit, killed immediately. Pabhavagyaha, aware of the prowess. Munehe, of the great sage. Samyak, completely. Samadehe, by meditation. Tapasaha, by austerity. Cha, also. Saha, he. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Jamadagni then ordered his youngest son, Parashurama, to kill his brothers who had disobeyed this order and his mother who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parashurama, knowing the power of his father, who was practicing meditation and austerity, killed his mother and brothers immediately. Please repeat. Jamadagni then ordered his youngest son, Parashurama, to kill his brothers who had disobeyed this order and his mother who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parashurama, knowing the power of his father, who was practicing meditation and austerity, killed his mother and brothers immediately. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word Prabhavagyaha is significant. Parashurama knew the prowess of his father, and therefore he agreed to carry out his father's order. He thought that if he refused to carry out the order, he would be cursed. But if he carried it out, his father would be pleased. And when his father was pleased, Parashurama would ask the benediction of having his mother and brothers brought back to life. Parashurama was confident in this regard, and therefore he agreed to kill his mother and brothers. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatade Shatarni Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtang Stapitang Tena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Tapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvatangsha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Ancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanang pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastati Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So if every time a son disobeyed his father or a wife committed mental adultery, they were to be killed, this planet would hardly have any population. Just about everybody on this planet would have been killed. In Kali Yuga, everybody practically does this, disobeys their father and commits at least mental adultery, if not actual adultery. There are still some places on the planet where fathers think they have this right to kill the son if he disobeys an order, or and to kill the wife for practically any reason. Daughter, there was some case not so long ago, the daughter was attracted to some boy from another village, and the father didn't agree that they should associate, but she associated with him anyway. And so he killed her, and when the mother and her, the mother's sister, the auntie, they protested, and he killed them too. It was big news all around the world. But unfortunately, that father didn't have the power to bring them back to life. See? Not the same quality or qualification as Jamadagni. Jamadagni gave the order, but he is on such a level of spiritual advancement that he has the power to bring them back to life when requested by Parashuram. It seems so far in the ninth canto, at least in the last few chapters, there's a lot of blood flowing. It makes you wonder. Prithvi Maharaj had 7 days to live. Sukadeva Goswami is speaking Bhagavatam. Why didn't he just jump over all these bloody parts and just concentrate on all the nectar from the 10th canto? Why is all this in here? So obviously it's there for a reason. It's there for to convince us of many different things. To convince us of the prowess of the Supreme Lord in person, when he comes personally, or his avatars, his incarnations, his Shaktivesh avatars, like Parashuram, the power of the Lord to create, maintain, and destroy. We see when Parashuram got into it with Kartavirya Arjuna and his followers, his soldiers, he was moving at the speed of mind and decimating so many hundreds of thousands of soldiers in like the blink of an eye. Then he slowed down to the speed of the wind and continued to. So this is very impressive. We shouldn't take this lightly. The killing propensity in there is there in all of us. Why? Because it exists in the Supreme Lord, and we're all parts and parcels of the Lord. So that propensity to kill is there. We cannot deny it. It is there. Practically every day, we're all killing. We're stepping on so many ants, and by breathing, by lighting fire, by drinking water, in so many ways, we're destroying so many living entities. We may not be conscious of it. Or sometimes we are. Unfortunately, even when we come to Krishna consciousness, and we're learning about the nature of the soul, the existence of the soul, the right of every soul to live a natural life and die a natural death. Sometimes still it doesn't sink in right away. One time there were two devotees, and one devotee would say, "Ah, there's a spider," and the other one just say, "Hey, step on it." No, that spider, that roach, that silverfish, they all have a right to live. Now sometimes, unfortunately, by whatever, the building is very old. Many of the buildings around here, like the one we live in at the BBT, very old, built in the 40s. So in spite of all good hygiene of the tenants, still it becomes infested, but sometimes with roaches or silverfish or whatever. That's a different argument. But in general, we should try to never consciously kill any other living being. We should try it out. Even though we're so huge in comparison to them, we don't have the right to step on them. Imagine if there was a race of humanoids much, much bigger than we are. At one time on this planet, there were human beings measured up to like 18 feet tall. Instead, said that Bhishma Dev was probably about 18 feet tall. So what if there were, you know, humanoids who were 28 feet tall, 68 feet tall? They could walk around and just step on us and crush us. Will we agree that it's okay? They just didn't realize what they were doing? No. We would protest like anything and do our best to rid the world of these people who are stepping on us every day. We all have that instinct to live because we live eternally. Our natural instinct is to stay alive. We don't want to die. Death is actually a foreign imposition on the soul. We don't want to die. So, but sometimes in the management of this material world, this Marchaloka, this is a place where death occurs. No death in the spiritual world. Nobody dies there. In the material world, though, it is known as Marchaloka. Everyone dies, up to and including Lord Brahma. At the end of his lifetime, when the entire universe is wrapped up, if he's qualified to go back to Godhead, he does so. If not, he stays in the material world, just like all the other living entities who are not qualified to go back to Godhead. So even Lord Brahma has to experience death, what to speak of all of us. So, sometimes in managing this material world, Marchaloka, killing is required. And again, sometimes even as devotees, we don't understand that. Because people will read this and ask, you people are worshipping some kind of god, even up to and including your Krishna. He killed so many people. Why? Why God has to kill? What kind of God is that? God is supposed to be love, man. It's all about love, man. What is this God that goes around killing people? So, sometimes even as devotees we become confused, and Prabhupada would discuss that. Now people want to hear about Yashoda Damodar and Gopi Krishna. They don't want to hear about Arjun Krishna or Parashuram killing people at the speed of mind. Even in the devotee community, some don't want to hear that. But this is nonsense. We cannot chop up the Bhagavatam like a Chinese menu, Prabhupada said. You know, you take one from column A and part from column B and skip over the ones you don't like. And no, you have to take the whole thing in toto. The whole thing is there for a purpose. Shukadeva Goswami related these pastimes for a purpose, not for us to skip over. So, Prabhupada would stress, there's no difference between Gopi Krishna, Yashoda Damodar, or Arjun Krishna, or Bal Krishna. You know, there sometimes people like Bal Krishna, but they don't like Gopi Krishna, because that's immoral. He's dancing with other men's wives. You know, so we have to take Krishna in toto. We have to understand the whole package. Not just pick out the parts that we like and skip over the rest of it. So again, this is in here for a reason. We should be in awe of the prowess of Lord Parashuram. If we were ringside when he was decimating the armies of Kartavirya Arjuna, what would we say? Jai! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! And if we wouldn't, then something's wrong with us. Something is wrong with us. If we don't loudly proclaim Hari Bol when Krishna is killing, when Lord Nrisimhadev, when Lord Nrisimhadev rips apart Hiranyakashipu, we should all go, Jai, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Isn't it? We should be thrilled. So the same thing is there. When Parashuram is decimating these armies, we should be thrilled. This is part of the Lord's Leela. And devotees of the Lord are thrilled when the Lord does anything. But again, it's not so easy for us to understand, because we're living here in Marchaloka. Death, we know it's coming for every one of us. We don't want it to come. When other people die, especially people that we know, every day, so many people are dying. Just like, was it yesterday? No, it actually happened the day before, right? In Paris, where they attacked. And now the death toll is up to like 140, 150, something like that. They went to a stadium. Just a couple of months ago, I went by that stadium. Literally drove right by it. They attacked a stadium where a soccer match was going on. They attacked a concert hall. They attacked some restaurants. And so it doesn't seem, I mean, we're shocked, but it doesn't seem so direct. But when somebody that we know dies, oh my God, did you hear so-and-so just passed away? It becomes very personal. But every day and every moment, ani hani bhutani gacchantiya yamalayam, chesha stavara itchanti kim ascharya takparam, from the Mahabharata. Yudhishthira explaining what he found to be wonderful. Ahani hani bhutani gacchantiya yamalayalam. Yamayalam means the abode of Yamaraj. So every day, practically every moment, living entities are being sent to the abode of Yamaraj, which means they die and the soul is dragged before Yamaraj by the Yamadutas for judgment. So, what is wonderful about that? Shesha stavara itchanti, those who remain behind, in other words, haven't died yet, they're making plans like anything to be happy and take care of this and go here and go there. And once when a young man went to Prabhupada, he met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asked him what his plans were. He said he planned to tour all over the world. He said, Prabhupada, why are you touring all over the world? Wherever you go, the same things are going on. People are eating, sleeping, mating, defending, maybe in little slightly different ways, but same thing is going on everywhere. Don't waste your time. If one is traveling to preach, that's a different story. But just to travel to go here to say I went to Paris, I mean, yeah, you could have been in Paris just for sightseeing and then boom, a bomb goes off and you wonder, oh, how unfortunate. So this whole material existence is unfortunate and it's unnecessary. It's an imposition on the living entity. We don't have to be here. We only remain here because we want to stay here. Because of what Yudhishthira says, in spite of seeing so many people dying every day, we keep making plans. If I can just make another $10,000, another $100,000, then I can buy this, and I can go there, and I can do this, and I can do that. Meanwhile, the chakra is coming closer and closer and closer, and one day our head will be gone. Here, Parashuram is going to go and cut off the heads of all the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna and make a mountain out of them. Jai! Come on, we should get into it. These things are there for a reason. Whenever the Lord does something wonderful, we should be thrilled by it. We should be thrilled by this. You know, some of these terrorists, they're going jive because they killed 150 people. So what? That's nothing. Parshuram killed hundreds of thousands in a blink of an eye. Jive, that's really, you know. Killing somebody is not an achievement. Everybody's destined to die anyway. Just like Papa used to say, they're so proud of making nuclear bombs here, they can kill 10,000 people at one time. It's not a big achievement. Everybody's going to die anyway. Make something, some process by which they don't die anymore. Then we will go jai. Haribol. But that they cannot do. That they cannot do. So this is what we're presenting to the public. We're presenting the path of Krishna consciousness by which you don't have to die again. This will be the last death. Yes, you have this body now. And who wants to keep it anyway? Anybody here want to stay in this particular body eternally? This particular body that you have right now, is there anybody here who would want to stay in this body eternally? I don't think so. So one more body to give up. And if we qualify ourselves, takta deham punarjanma nayati mameti sarjana, we go back to Krishna. Give up this troublesome body, like right now my knees can barely bend. You know, just for most of my life, fairly healthy, hardly anything. I had a hernia operation. That's about the most major thing that's happened. But other than that, this body's been pretty, compliant. But now, after 63, the knees are locking up and so many things are happening. And we know eventually, again, we also have to go. But death for the devotee and death for the non-devotee are not the same. The example that Prabhupada used many times is that of the cat and the rat and the cat with the kitten. When the cat catches a rat, and we have some pretty good ratters around here. Now, Gauri's cat is a pretty good ratter. And there's some other one. There's a black and white one that comes by the BBT regularly. So when the cat catches the rat, that rat is not thinking Haribo. He knows death is here, and he's like trembling and shaking. And sometimes the cats play with them for a few minutes and then grab them again. So that's not fun. But when the cat picks up her kitten, the kitten is completely relaxed. You've seen them. They just like go limp and they hang, and the cat just moves them where they want. They're not afraid. They're not afraid. So for death for devotees like that, Krishna's picking up his kitten devotee and moving them to another place. That's all. So we should not be afraid of death. We should not be afraid of that. Antakale cha purusha agate gata sarvasa chinyat asanga shastrena sprihang deham chuyena tam. This is from the first canto, nice verse. It says, antakale, at the end of life, which is going to be there for all of us, we're not going to live forever in this body, we should be fearless. This verse is exhorting us. You should be fearless when death comes. And give up all attachments to everything here. We can't take our digital cameras, we can't take our nice car, we can't take our nice dhoti and kurta. Whatever we have, we cannot take. So before death comes, don't be too attached to it. It's something that Krishna has given, whether it's the dhoti or the car or the digital camera, to use in his service. And if we employ them in that mentality, with that mentality, then we don't become overly attached to them. We just use them for what they're meant for. So that when death comes, we're not wondering. Nowadays, life has become so complicated that when death comes, they're wondering, oh, did I give anybody the password to my bank account online? Did I... So many things to worry about when death comes. So they can't die peacefully. They're worried about this and that and, you know, so many things and, oh my God. And no. According to the Bhagavatam, we should be willing to die anonymously. This is a recommendation of the Bhagavatam, actually. When one sees death coming, one should just go off to the forest somewhere and don't give anybody any trouble. Just sit down and give up the body. Some people think this is suicide, and Hinduism supports suicide. No, no, this is spiritual culture. Spiritual culture is, don't give anybody any trouble. Death is going to be there. When you know death is there, just give up the body and go. Don't go through all this attachment to all these machines to keep you alive for a few more days and all this kind of stuff. No. But it is not the suicide that some people want to do, and they actually have been authorized in some jurisdictions, where people see that they're going to, you know, life is getting hard, they're 70, 75, and they want to kill themselves. It's not like that. The devotees are not like that. The devotees wait for death to arrive, but they don't want to give any trouble to anybody. That's a different mentality. Practically, they are pushing for legislation in some jurisdictions that any human being over 70 should have the right to kill themselves if they don't want to live anymore. Nowadays, they already have assisted suicide laws on the books in some countries, like the Netherlands is one, Switzerland is another one, where if people are terminally ill, they can ask for death from the doctor or a relative or something like that. Yeah, some states in the United States also, Oregon, Washington. But so the Vedic approach is not like that. That, you know, I want to kill myself just because, you know, life is becoming painful. Just like I kill my dog. And all the time they do that. Oh, the dog is old and life is getting difficult for him. Let me kill him. No, the dog has a right to live a natural life and die a natural death. And so do the human beings. It's not the same. The Vedic culture is that you should be so advanced spiritually that you're not attached to the body and you could go somewhere and put the body down, just like Dhritarashtra did. He was pretty much a rascal for most of his life, you know, standing behind his rascal sons, Duryodhana and company, as they tried to kill the Pandavas and tried to destroy the world practically. But at the end, when Vidura came to him and convinced him that you're living in the house of those people, the Pandavas, that your sons tried to kill. Don't you have any shame? Get out of here. So he did. Finally, he was convinced. And so he and Gandhari, they went to the forest. And by his knowledge of mystic yoga, he burned his body to death. So that's different. That's not, you know, like this assisted suicide business. No. Practically in Vedic culture, every gentleman knew how to do this. They knew the art, the science of mystic yoga, so that when death came or was about to come, they could sit down and self-immolate. So, again, we are hearing about the wonderful prowess of Lord Parashuram. And we know Krishna himself did when he came. He rid the world so many times of so many miscreant kshatriyas, so-called kshatriyas. We should be in awe of the Lord's prowess. Another point of meditation for us about the Lord. And Srishti Stiti Pralaya. Everything, creation, maintenance, destruction, ultimately is under Krishna's jurisdiction. And the devotees want to know about it. We don't just want to hear about Yashoda, Damodar, or Gopi, Krishna. We want to hear about all of Krishna's activities in the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this material world. So we can stop here. Any comments, questions? Yes, Sevasprabhu. Somebody get the mic.
I was just wondering, you know, you have different kinds of yogis. You have a mystic yogi, and you know, they actually want to, like, voluntarily leave their body. Now, is that considered to be suicide? In other words, if they're a mystic yogi and they're living for 100 years, a couple hundred years, or whatever, and then they're just deciding, well, I'm tired of this. I'm just going to let this body go. Isn't that also a form of suicide?
No, because generally the mystic yogis know the destination that they want to go to and how to get there. They don't just kill the body and then float around like a ghost. If you commit suicide due to ignorance, you become a ghost. But those who know the art of mystic yoga, they already know their next destination. They know their destination and they know the art of getting there. Just like they know the art of traveling from one place to another quickly, proper to say. They would dip into the Ganges somewhere in the Himalayas and they would appear in Calcutta, you know.
What if they miscalculated?
Huh?
What if they miscalculated?
That sometimes happens. I'm sure. They thought they were going to go to this planet, but they wind up took a wrong turn somewhere. How did I wind up on that? Yeah. But generally, they know. They know when they sit down and they do that self-immolation or however they leave the body, they know their next destination. It's already picked out and they know how to get there. They ride on the celestial Ganges or something and they pop up in another planet somewhere else. What they can't do, though, they can't give themselves liberation. That they can't do. So they can move around inside the material world by their mystic process, but they cannot give themselves liberation. They can't go back to Godhead by some mystic process. Only by pleasing Krishna through devotional service can you do that.
Yeah.
Okay. One second. Wait for the mic.
We also have examples of Raghunath Das Goswami and Sanatana Goswami in a different context. Can you explain that too? And even, you heard the question? That we have different occasions in which devotees like Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, also they thought about it. And I'm asking
they thought about what?
About, you know, like committing suicide.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And in another part also different... Duryodhana, when he took birth, and Vidura told his father, "You should just been killed before taking birth."
Yeah. So Sanatana Goswami was not planning to commit suicide out of frustration at material existence. He's a pure devotee, floating in the ocean of bliss, bhakti rasamrita sindhu. So his inclination was brought about by the fact that he was suffering from these weeping sores and Lord Chaitanya would embrace him every day. And he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to have the pus and stuff from his weeping sores go on the bodies of the Lord. So he decided, let me give up this body. But Lord Chaitanya stopped him. He said, don't you think that if one could attain Krishna by suicide, that I wouldn't have killed myself a long time ago? But you cannot attain Krishna by suicide. You cannot do this. And plus, on top of that, he said, you have given me this body, so now this body is mine. It's meant for my service. So it's not yours anymore. You cannot kill this body without my permission.